Why it's a lie. In our 25th jam-packed podgram, Chicago is called the Windy City because it is the windiest city. Brain cells die, and they don't ever regenerate and grow back. And moths are attracted to flames. Each of those statements is false. So let's find out.
Why it's a lie.
Chicago, the Windy City, the Winnipeg of the South. It is called the Windy City because it is the windiest city in North America. No? Okay, how about in the U.S.? No? The second windiest. Nope. Third? Fifth? Okay, it's in the top 10. No. According to the U.S. Weather Service, and what year you check, Chicago comes in anywhere from 12th to 16th windiest major city in the U.S. Who's windier? Well, Boston is number one, with an average of 12.3 miles or 19.8 kilometers. Boston also has five of the windiest months of the year. Then you have Oklahoma, Buffalo, and Milwaukee, and then Dallas. Fun fact, San Francisco has four of the windiest months of the year, but comes in at number seven on the list. Followed by Oklahoma City, they have two of the windiest months, on average, and Buffalo, New York, has the windiest January, on average. Another thing to keep in mind is we've been talking about major cities. The windiest place in the U.S., city-wise, is apparently a place called Mount Washington, with an average wind speed of 35.1 miles per hour, or 56.5 kilometers. Are you kidding me? Chicago is like 10.3 miles, or 16.6 kilometers. Another fun fact? One of the least windy cities in the U.S. is Phoenix, which is really sad because it's really hot. Now, this isn't to say it never gets windy in Phoenix. We're talking about averages, right? And most gusty gusts. One of the most gusty gusts was in 2010 in Queens, New York, where the gusts were recorded at 125 miles per hour or 201 kilometers. That is gusty. In Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, the Chicago of the North, the intersection of Portage and Main has been called the coldest and windiest intersection. But that has yet to be actually proven. Okay, enough of that. Let's answer the burning question, which is, if they're not the windiest city, how did Chicago get the name the Windy City? Does it have anything to do with the weather? Well, some people say it could be because Chicago is next to Lake Michigan. Also, Chicago has a lot of tall buildings, so the air can whip around those guys pretty good. But most people say, no, not weather. There are two main things that could have led to the nickname. First, Chicago had a kind of rivalry with Cincinnati. Cincinnati was a meatpacking town and had the nickname, okay, get this, Porkopolis. Now, they had that nickname since like 1843. But then, in the 1860s, Chicago surpassed Cincinnati in meatpacking. So they started calling themselves Porkopolis. What an interesting feud. We're Porkopolis. Listen, buddy, we're Porkopolis. No, we're Porkopolis.
No, we're Porkopolis.
The things that made people proud in the 1800s. Meanwhile, who was the first place to call themselves the Windy City? It wasn't even Chicago. It was Green Bay. However, Chicago was first referred to as the Windy City in the 1870s. Once in a tourism-type campaign, when it was referred to as having cool breezes from the lake, and then the Philadelphia Inquirer shot back that it was the land of great winds and fire. And also, Chicago kind of called itself the Windy City in sports reports. They were in quite the rivalry with the Cincinnati baseball team. But here's the main reason Chicago became known as the Windy City all across America and the world. It came from an insult. It came from a New York newspaper man back in 1892. His name was Charles Dana, and he was an editor for a New York paper, and he wrote a very passionate editorial blasting Chicago because they were trying to get the World's Fair away from New York. In that editorial, he called Chicago the Windy City because of all the hot air from the politicians and businessmen trying to pump up Chicago to the world. "Don't pay any attention," he wrote in his New York Sun, "to the nonsensical claims of that Windy City. Its people could not build a World's Fair even if they won it." I have no idea if he sounded like that. I just wanted to do an old-timey voice. So, Chicago being the Windy City because it's the windiest city? No, That's why it's a lie. Brain cells can't regenerate. If you kill a brain cell, or rather, if a brain cell dies, it is never replaced.
That's it! Brain over, man!
Come on, that was pretty good. All right, anyway. I remember hearing this years ago, and I thought, well, I'm not smart enough to dispute it, but I did think, wait a second, kids' heads and adult heads are different sizes, so there must be some growing of brains over the years, right? Then many years later, I learned that our, and in fact, the brains of all species, are composed primarily of two broad classes of cells. There's neurons and glial cells. Now, glial cells come in several types, and they perform a number of critical functions, like structural and metabolic support, insulation, and guidance of development. People think that these ones can generate a little bit. Neurons, however, are, for the most part, considered the most important cells in the brain. Why? Well, neurons can send signals to specific target cells over long distances. These are the ones that people think can never, never regenerate. Why? Well, it was believed and taught to scientists, from scientists, for about the last 100 years. But in 1998, scientists discovered that brain cells in mature humans can regenerate just a lot slower than other cells. They thought that complex brains would be severely disrupted by new cell growth. But the study found that the memory and learning center of the brain can create new cells, which, hey, that's great news for people with brain disorders like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and the others, right? Because you can get some stem cells in there and everything could change. Brain awesomeness? Fun fact, the heart was long considered one of those organs that could never replace its cells, but research has shown that until about our mid-20s, our hearts replace 1% of the cells every year. Then about a 0.5% every year after that. So in a lifetime, we replace about half our heart cells. Hopefully the ones that need it first. Another fun fact, drinking alcohol does not kill brain cells. What it does is it slows down the firing of your neurons. Now, this is not an endorsement for drinking. That's just the facts. But saying that brain cells can't regenerate ever, that's why it's a lie. Moths are attracted to flames. Well, of course, this is true. It's a comparison everyone uses. It's the simile of all similes. Wait, you're saying this simile is a silly simile? Why, yes, because moths aren't attracted to flames. They're actually disoriented by the flames and lights, for that matter. Now, here's why that is a big distinction here. The moth is flying around doing its moth thing, and when light shows up in its path, it gets messed up, and it now has a really hard time flying in a straight line. Now, hold on, Jim. The sun is light. The moon is light. Well, reflected light. How come moths aren't disoriented by those? Eh, smarty pants? Well, those light sources are really, really far away, and they've been around for a really, really long time, so the moth is used to it. And it makes a great guide, right? They kind of do math in their head, right? Moths have actually evolved to use the sun and the moon to calculate how to fly straight. But candles and lights, they're much closer, and they're newer, and so the moth sees them and goes, whoa, wait, what? Must adjust course. So if the moth is flying in a straight line, and a light shows up, all of a sudden the moth thinks, uh-oh, I want to be going in a straight line, and then kind of curves itself to match with the flame or the light. Then it continues to curve, and all of a sudden, Mothy McMothington is super confused and kind of going around the light in a wonky circle. Now, eventually the moth may figure it out, try to adjust again, and this can mean either leaving orbit to freedom or crashing into the flame and burning up. Fun fact, moths don't really eat clothes, it's the caterpillars, the moth caterpillars, who do that. But moths being attracted to flames, that's why it's a lie. Remember, hearing from you is like candy for our brains. Make a comment on podomatic.com. You can give us 5 stars on iTunes. It doesn't cost you anything and it helps get the word out. You could, you know, like something on the Facebook page, maybe tell a friend, especially a young person. Let's make sure the next generation thinks more critically than, well, mine. You know, a generation that goes, wait a second, you think water has a memory? And if you dilute something 100 times, that will make it cure you from a specific ailment even though there's no trace of the original thing in the water? Wait, that sounds like a lie. Okay, that's it. Thanks for listening to
Why It's a Lie. Created by Jim and helped out by friends like me. I'm Mark. Please subscribe to Why It's a Lie on iTunes and leave awesome reviews. Thanks for listening.